Welcome back to the second skill of creating empowering alternatives by using transformational vocabulary. So let's get started.
What I want to do now is get you to focus a little bit. And we're going to focus on a couple of subjects that are very, very simple, but very powerful. So sit up in your chair and put yourself in a focused state. These principles that we're going to talk about here will help you to make changes at such a rapid pace. And the way to make change is so simple that for those of you who have not been exposed to my sharing it with you before, those who haven't had a chance to use it yet, you're going to have a hard time believing it could really work that easily. But I'm telling you, when I first came up with the distinctions, I didn't believe it either, but it works. Specifically, what we're going to talk about is what I call transformational vocabulary. A lot of research shows that when two people interact, words play the smallest impact on what actually influences how a person feels. What usually influences more of it than words? That's right, your tonality, and what influences even more? Physiology. There's no doubt that that is true. However, words have unbelievable power. Words by themselves have unbelievable power to move people if you choose the right words. And the words that you're using moment to moment as you live are shaping your destiny. And the reason is, think about it, throughout history, different people have selected words that have moved us because the right words don't just get us to listen, but the right words will move us to action. See, our country here in the U.S. was formed by a few people who put the right words together. And actions were moved by a few people. When Patrick Henry got up way back when, right, and said, I don't know what course others will take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. And he did it with every ounce of congruency in his soul. He moved mass number of people to take action. It wasn't just words. You know, when they got together and put this thing called the Declaration of Independence together, it wasn't just words. Those words represented actions. They were very specific words, words that would move men and women for decades, for centuries. Martin Luther King used words, I have a dream. John F. Kennedy used words. Words can make us laugh, they can make us cry, they can wound us, and they can heal us. Words can change the way you think, and they can change the way you feel in an instant. And most of us know this, but we don't use it on ourselves. We just think about other great leaders and how they use words to move us. We got to start thinking about ourselves. One word can change your state. Think of a word like chivalry. Does that feel different than being gentlemanly? You better believe it. Or you think of a word like nobility, or integrity, or impeccability. These bring up all kinds of other images and sounds and feelings. Words create a biochemical effect on our body. And so what we've got to do is become sensitized to the words that we use. Not where we're freaked out about them, but where we're very clear that words do have an impact. And what really impacts us are the consistent words that we use. The habitual words that we use are shaping who we are. And here's how and why. First of all, think about it. Every one of us in this room have experiences, but our experiences have to be taken in through this funnel called our brain. And as we start to get certain sounds and tonalities, and we hear certain consonants or vowels, and there are certain movements in a person's gesturing, in their face, all this stuff is coming into your brain right now. And your brain very quickly has to determine, what is this what? And what should I what? So your brain is constantly creating shortcuts to be able to make that decision more quickly. Because if you can decide more quickly, it's likely you can avoid pain more often and you can get pleasure more often. So we as human beings have created a series of ways to make shortcuts to know what things mean and what to do. If every time something happened, you had to search your brain for every other time you saw this imagery, you heard these exact sounds in this exact same way, and you had to search all your references, it would take a long time to decide. So instead, your brain has developed belief systems. Belief systems are nothing but generalizations. See, when you go out and you come to a door, like we have around this room, you don't actually know how to open that door. You generalize you know how to open that door. You believe you know how to open that door. If every time you went through those doors, you had to search your memory to see a door that was exactly like this in the exact same way, it would take you forever. But your brain is generalized and says, if a door looks like that, it usually push-pull, turn it sideways, turn it this way, and it'll open. You've generalized, and that saves you time. So generalizations sometimes empower us, don't they? Sometimes generalizations disempower us, like love is destructive. See, maybe once you saw something and misinterpreted what it meant, and now that becomes your shortcut. And sometimes our shortcuts shortchange us. All beliefs are made up of words. an important distinction. Your beliefs are made up of words. If we change one word within the belief system that you have, we will change the belief. One word. Because words create a different shade of meaning and emotion and sensation. So we want to listen to the words that people are using. It's part of the diagnostic process. Remember I told you my antenna going? I'll tell you one of the things I'm noticing. I'm always noticing somebody's physiology. And my antenna notices what's their body like because I know everything's being filtered through the way they're using their body. I'm always listening for limiting beliefs, but the first thing is physiology. The second thing for me is what I call transformational vocabulary. I'm listening for words that I know are creating limits within that person as they speak or even as they think out loud. Those words are the basis of your ability to represent to yourself what is happening in the world. Let me clarify even more by giving you a little bit of frame of reference. All these sensations are coming in and are being brought into this funnel called your brain. Your brain's got to figure out, what does this mean? So what it does is it gets these sensations, is it starts to generalize so it can make a decision more quickly. And what it has to do is put a label on this to speed the process up. So imagine this funnel of liquid sensation. By the way, when you say I feel angry, is anger always the exact same sensations? Yes or no? It may feel like it because once you call it anger, you have an anchor to what anger is, and you trigger all those sensations you call anger into the experience. But right before you called it anger, it may have had varying levels of liquid sensation within you. Are you following the metaphor? Like sometimes something happens, you really get angry. Sometimes you get in between angry. Sometimes it's all over there. But some of you have habitual ways of describing any level of pain that you categorize as anger, and you call it all anger. And the minute you do, you may take something that was a little bit upsetting and make it anger immediately, and you intensify the emotion. How many are following the process? Now, this distinction, think of it again like a funnel, and imagine that the words that you and I habitually use, are like little patterns down here, like cookie cutters, if you would. If these little forms down here come along, and some are square and some are triangle, and it fits down in here, and you've only got three forms to fit it in, you've got about three emotions you're going to feel. Because the minute you take your experience of life and put a word to it, it becomes what you call it. Your brain instantly fires off the biochemistry attached to that word, and that is your experience. And if you got three words, you got three experiences of life. And that's why most of you have 12 emotions. Because you've got 12 words you use habitually to describe your pain and pleasure. It's not that you don't have other sensations. It's that you don't experience them because you label them ineffectively. Now, what's the truth? The truth of the matter is, in the English language, we have 500,000 words in our language. We have the largest language in the world. Nothing even close. Closest thing is Germany, and it is a distant second. So we have all these words. So out of those words, we have over 3,000 words that describe emotion. 3,000 words! And out of the 3,000 words that describe emotion, you selected 12. And that's why you experience them. Because you could be calling it something else that probably would be even more precise. But you only got these one or two or three little designs here, and they come in and you stick it in there, and sure enough, you go, there I go again. Always happens to me. Can't figure out why. Just because I call it this, maybe that's why. But if you became more precise in your distinction about what word to use, you might be able to change your entire life just by changing habitual vocabulary, because the minute you put the label, you begin to have the experience. Before that, it's only sensation. When you put the label, it becomes perception. And we respond more to our perceptions than our sensations. We don't know what our sensations mean yet. When you organize them into a perception, that's when you begin to feel and respond. Have you ever been in a place you're not quite sure how to feel about something? How many of you have been in that place? That's when you're experiencing sensations, and you're still just sensing things. You haven't perceived them yet. When you perceive it, as you organize it into imagery, organize it into meaning, you organize it into a label, if you will, and words is one of the number one ways we've learned as a shortcut to tell ourselves what something means so we can deal with it. It's also one of the number one ways we've learned to communicate to other people, right? How else do you tell somebody what you're feeling? So you pull in there and pull out a word. But these shortcuts shortchange us emotionally. Unless we expand our references. And to give you an idea, what triggered me to go through this whole experience was I was in a meeting one day with my CEO at the time for one of my major companies and a good friend of both of ours, a mutual good friend who's a very, very successful entrepreneur, very successful. And we were all in this meeting, And somebody came in the meeting and gave us feedback about a certain individual we were negotiating with. And the feedback they gave us made us all believe this guy totally had leverage that was inappropriate and unfair. And he took advantage of it. And he was trying to rip us off in all our perceptions. There really wasn't much we could do in that short-term moment. So we were in one of those positions where it would be real easy to feel what? Helpless, right? Not much we could do. I mean, we're going to get pain no matter what happens because he'd wired the game that way. And we'd fallen in the trap because we trusted him. And he was a liar. So when you get those kinds of things happen and somebody violates your trust, what kind of sensations do most of us feel? Upset of some sort, right? But what do you call those? Some of you say, well, it depends on how angry I get. That's true. You know what happened in the meeting? All three of us responded completely different to the exact same information. I got really angry. I was like, I can't even believe he did this. Oh, man, I was really angry about it. What's interesting is my CEO next to me went absolutely bonkers. Rage. I mean, even by my anger level, and I was upset, I thought this guy had lost it. It's like, I can't even believe it. I can't believe it. I mean, I am so much rage. I am so livid. Oh, God, I can't believe it. And I was like, mellow out. What's the deal, you know? I mean, it's really upsetting, but geez. Meanwhile, my buddy over here next to me, he's just sitting here going, oh, well. And I'm like looking around going, what is the deal here? I couldn't help but notice the radical differences between the three of us, and we were all impacted equally in terms of consequences. So what do you think went through my head? My brain's always asking questions. I said, wait a second, what is this? What's going on here? Why are we responding differently? I thought, okay, based on the organizing principle of all human behavior, what's going on here? If he's willing to go into rage, he must link lots of what to going to rage? The opportunity to get out of what?
Rage.
And get into what? And sure enough, I asked him, I said, what does it mean for you? When you get into rage like that, what does it mean to go into rage? He said, if I'm in rage like this, I can handle anything. Nothing stops me. So what has he linked? Clearly, power, a sense of being able to take control of his life, which takes him out of pain and puts him into pleasure. Then I went to my other buddy. And I said, doesn't this make you angry? He said, no, it kind of annoys me. I said, annoys you? He said, yeah, it kind of peeves me a little bit. I said, peeves you? Peeves you? I said, what a stupid word. I can't even believe this. I said, what does it mean to you to get upset? He said, well, if you get upset, you lose control. I said, yeah, and what happens then? He said, then the other guy wins. He links lots of what to being upset? Pain. And what does he link to not getting upset? Power and pleasure, because now he's in control, right? If he doesn't get upset, the other guy's not going to win, and he was a very competitive guy. All of a sudden, I understood why he behaved the way he did. Then I thought, what about me? What do I believe? I believe you get me upset, I'm like razor sharp. You get me upset, I'm razor sharp. I can do it either way. So I don't avoid being upset. If I get upset, I use it. If I'm not upset, I don't use it. I can do it either way. So I'm not going to go to the extreme on my one buddy, but at the same time, I didn't have this linkage that, you know, being like this is the way to be either. That seemed like weird and wimpy. Why would you? Peeved. I'm peeved. It's like, you know, that annoys me. And I was like, I just realized I've never seen you really upset. He said, no, not really. Upset's not something I really get. I said, don't you ever get angry? And the CEO went, don't you ever go into rage? And I'm like, you know, relax. You know? And he said, no. He said, I get a little peeved, a little annoyed. Every once in a while, I get a little tinkled. I said, tinkled? And he started to laugh like crazy, and I was like, this is the weirdest stuff, you know? So I said, what about that time when the IRS came and they took his money, they took $250,000 of his right out of his bank accounts, and they were wrong. And it took him 2.5 years to get his money back. One agent just got like this little hair in the wrong place and got upset about him. And as a result, he went after my buddy, and he took total advantage. I said, didn't that make you angry? The other guy's going, I'd kill him, I'd kill him. You know, he goes, it really peeved me. I said, come on. He said, no, I was peeved, I was tinkled, I was annoyed, but that was about it. I said, I don't understand. And then I started realizing, if I kept thinking to myself, this really peeves me, I would never get upset. Because it would break my pattern. I feel like such an idiot saying the word, you know. And so it kind of like stuck in my head, you know. And so I kept thinking about this and thinking about how we all reacted so differently. One guy's words were rage. I'm livid. The other guy's, I'm angry. The other one's, I'm peeved and tinkled.